Good day, and welcome to the University of Minnesota Extension Cropcast, Minnesota Cropcast. I'm your host, Dave Nicolai, with the University of Minnesota Extension. I'm a regional extension educator, and along with my co-host here, Dr. Seth Knave. Seth is University of Minnesota Extension soybean specialist, and Seth, we're getting into the spring season. We have a special guest here. We're going to get right into it, Tom Hoverstead from the University of Minnesota Research and Outreach Center at Waseca. And we're talking on this mid to late part of April here. And Tom, I guess at this point in time, people have made some progress in the field, but we're still early enough and so forth that we don't have to really lose a lot of sleep and be worried about our planting date. How are things at Waseca?
Yes, we've had a planting window open up here about the middle of April, similar to last year. Last year, the spring of 2023, we had a string of 80 degree days in the middle of April. A number of people planted then. Some of that didn't turn out so well last year because we had a 6-inch rain in May that caused some trouble. I don't see that happening again. Some chose to take advantage of that little planting window. I had a number of people ask me about what's best because the system that we're on the backside of now, it's cool. Soils were plenty warm. They've cooled back down now. And this system was pretty well forecast that if you plant, it's going to be a rain and then some cold weather after, and a lot of people don't like to do that. Some chose to just wait. Others, and my thinking is, if getting a couple of days in around the 13th, 14th, 15th of April is going to help you get your planting done by the 5th of May, I would go ahead and plant. If you think delaying till April 25th and starting after this system moves through and soils warm back up and you can still get done by May 5th, I think that's a good choice too. So it's really an individual. Some people indicated, you know, I've got this farm that's a 20-mile drive. If I can go get that out of the way and then the rest of the spring I can concentrate nearer home, that's a good idea too. Soil types maybe make a difference. Some have some pretty well-drained soils that if they plant early, they aren't too concerned about that. Others said, if I plant and I get 2 or 3 inches of rain on it, I'm just going to have to replant anyway. So there's all kinds of scenarios, and everybody's got to know their own operation.
So I guess we're kind of classifying all of this under risk management, right? So with the risk, we're looking, as farmers, we're looking at risk of adverse weather in the future and whether that future weather is going to be harmful to the crop we planted or not. So this question about better in the bag or in the ground isn't really a question about today. It's about the future, right? So that's, it seems like we're always coming back to this, and I think you really skillfully brought out the fact that this is very different farm to farm, depending on the number of acres and the scale of the equipment and things like this. And it's getting that work done in the future. How can we be in a position to get it all done by, as you said, May 5th? I think that's a great target. Is that kind of how you're seeing it too?
Yes, I've even stretched that May 5th out to about the 10th of May. Because year in and year out, I've done planting date. As many of you know, I've been at this about 40 years. And a number of years, I've always done some planting date work. And I start about the 20th of April. My second date, I put in May 5th to May 10th. And more recently, that second planting has come out just as good as the first, if not even better. And I've thought about our climate and what it's done to us. Now, Minnesota's climate is getting warmer and it's getting wetter. Of those two, I think on the farm, the wetter is the one that causes us a little bit more management. The warmer part, much of the warming is in the winter anyway, when we're not talking about crop farming. But it's warmer by just a little bit. We still run the risk of frost, and we run, you know, the spring frost dates, the last date in the spring, the first fall frost are still risks for us in the northern Corn Belt here. But by and large, the big thing about planting early over the decades is that we take a better chance of especially corn pollinating in better moisture conditions. Our rainfall is up like 25%. It's significantly up. We don't see those hot, dry conditions that we used to have to deal with around pollination, and that can be critical on corn. If it's trying to tassel and we have very little soil moisture, it's hot and dry, like August when our lawns used to turn brown every year, we just don't see that as much anymore. So I think we can spread that planting date out to the 10th of May and still avoid a lot of the risks associated with poor pollination and still get a good crop by the time we freeze in the fall.
That's really interesting that you bring up the focus on the mid-season, because I do think a lot of us think about this spring and fall because that's when we're in the fields and that's where we're really impacted directly. Our operations are impacted, right? Whether it's raining or cold impacts whether we're in the field, and we write that date on the calendar for records. And so we kind of remember how weather impacts both spring and fall activities. But sometimes we kind of, maybe we forget a little bit, and maybe that mid-season thing about temperature and pollination is just a little bit messy too, because we don't know at the time when we're getting that hot, dry weather, the impacts we're going to have in the end of the year. And so I'm just thinking through the psychology on this, but I do appreciate this idea that the changes in weather may be benefiting us mostly in the middle of the year rather than having big effects on the ends.
You know, Tom,
I think it allows for a longer pollination season. I honestly do. Even some of our temperature records, we don't see as many 100 degree temperatures as we did. Humidity, I think, is the big thing. We're more humid than we used to be, and that usually is helpful at pollination. 90 degrees and humid isn't detrimental. 105 with no humidity is trouble.
Tom, maybe I'd like to segue a little bit. We talked about planting dates, and you mentioned, you know, the climate and weather, and especially this last year. You know, we had almost a 90-day period here where we're above normal temperatures. And I think you actually took advantage of that to what I would say run an observation, not an experiment, but an observation at Wasika in terms of being able to actually plant extremely early. And I'm just curious, how did that turn out in terms of your observations, and what did you plant, and when did that go on the ground?
Well, that was something I saw the opportunity. It was the end of February. It was unusually warm, about 70 degrees. I'm pretty sure it was a Monday. I came in and I said, I'm going to walk out in the field and just see what it looks like. If the soil is workable, we had already lost our soil frost, which is unusual for that time of year. We didn't have a lot of soil frost. We had a very mild winter. But things you need to watch for in the spring of the year on the farm. One is when the soil thaws out, we lose our soil frost. Soils to dry out, soils to warm up. So we had done two out of the three. We lost our soil frost. It was dry on top. I went out there. It was very workable. Of course, we hadn't warmed up. It was the 26th of February. And I said, you know what? I think we can plant. So we did. We have small equipment. It's not hard to get. We planted spring wheat, corn, and soybeans. The spring wheat I was confident in. This is not the first time I've done it in February. Back in the 80s, we had a real dry February. A plot technician that's now retired and I, we did the same thing. We said, let's go just plant some wheat. It turned out fine. But we didn't plant corn and soybeans then. So we planted some corn and soybeans on the 26th of February just to see. My thinking is this may not happen again for 50 years. I think it maybe 100 years. But when it does happen again, we'll be able to say, well, back in 24, we saw those conditions and here's what happened. So I've had that corn and soybeans in the ground now for nearly 2 months. I've calculated the heat units. We've had about 157 heat units. We usually look for germination corn about 125 heat units. It's seen enough, but it's not up yet. I don't know what we'll get out of it. I wasn't expecting a normal stand. I thought it could be anywhere from zero to pretty good. Now what I've done is I've taken a few of those seeds that have been in the soil nearly 2 months, brought them into what I'm calling seedling intensive care. We have a unit here that works on soybean cyst nematode. They have a grow room that has lights. It's about 85 degrees by day. I think maybe it cools off a little bit at night, maybe to 70, 75. So you can put seeds in there, and if they're capable of growing, they will grow in there. So we transferred a few into that. I'm calling it intensive care. And if they can't survive after they're in there for a while, I'm going to declare them dead. But we also did the same thing about the middle of March, March 19th. We put in another one. Those seeds actually look like they have a chance. And we did it again on April 15th, what I would call an early planting in a so-called normal year. So we've got three scenarios out there. First one, I don't know. I've had those seeds in the grow room for a few days now. I haven't seen any of date one germinate. A couple of the soybeans actually did. The February soybeans actually are growing in the grow room. I only put a few seeds in there, not a lot. The first corn, I haven't seen any success with that yet. The March planting, I think that's got a chance.
It's very interesting. I'm already dreaming up other experiments. But I'm glad you took advantage of it. I wish we had, you know, it's time to plan some of these things, but these just happen. I'm really glad you did take advantage of it, because I think there's a lot of interesting stuff that you're going to learn from that. And I think digging these up and bringing these inside is really a smart idea. It is to see the potential for them, because you are in this weird situation where we put them under quite a bit of stress, but they had a little bit of heat early. But then, you know, we outlive this long piece there. So I did want to do selfishly take a second to mention that we, Nebel Cerruto and I put out a crop news this week on early planting in soybean. And it kind of highlights some of the things that Tom is bringing up about timing. And so Anibal modeled out a lot of scenarios for planting soybeans early relative to early frost dates. And most of it's very conservative measure, but it gives us an idea how frost rates differ around, or frost dates differ around the state. And then he's actually able to use historical data to back calculate if it does take 200 heat units for a soybean to emerge, when would that planting date be prior to any individual frost within that year? So we can actually determine what would be the date to plant across the past, you know, historical 20 years or so. And when should you plant in order to be outside of a frost window? So it's kind of an academic interest in or a study, but I think if people are really interested in that, I think it's worth taking a look at, and it does show the differences. It does come back to what you end up predicting, these kind of late April, early May dates for planting soybean, which tend to be what people are doing anyway. And so it's good to run the math. It's kind of like double checking your math, right? You run the math and you determine that what we see in the field is actually pretty close to what works in reality. So it's again, nice little exercise. And so check out Crop News this week if you want to look for that story. It's called Risk Management Considerations for Early Planted Soybean.
Well, Tom,
I think there is a lot of interest in planting soybeans earlier and earlier. I think as farmers look at what the conditions are and they say, well, I don't know if I should plant corn. It's a little marginal. Occasionally they will go out and plant some soybeans. For a couple reasons, I think soybeans, if you get 70% of a stand, I think you've shown over the years that we can get very good yields without optimum stands. Corn, that's probably not true. And if Yeah, there is a disaster. It seems like the investment in a corn soybean crop is less than a corn crop, so it's probably a little less risky. I think a lot of people are interested in planting soybeans early, and I think your data shows that early planted year in and year out certainly does better.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I don't, again, I don't want to talk, self-reflect on this too much, but my colleague in Wisconsin, Sean Connolly, is really the promoter of a lot of this early planting in soybean. And he's really the evangelist behind this that got a lot of this movement going. And his focus was entirely on yields in soybeans. And I never really bought into that, and I never really believed it. I think there's value in planting early, but when you're talking about planting corn versus soybean, I can't get my head around this idea that we should be planting soybeans earlier than corn for purely yield on a yield perspective. So that's when I started talking about this risk management thing, and that is just what you're saying, Tom, is about time management and which crop might stand a little bit tougher conditions, better, and then which one is, cheaper to replant, and that's soybean in both cases. And that's kind of what I've been hearing from farmers that have planted soybeans by this date this year, is they've all talked about this from a risk management standpoint. So I think we're kind of coming around to something here that I think does make some sense. And there's a lot of folks trying this year, so I think we're going to learn, trial by fire, but I think we're going to kind of figure some dial some of this in. And I'm just glad that farmers are willing to be a little bit flexible and not just go to the corn planter and drag out the corn planter and plant all their corn acres and then switch over to soybean. I think there's a lot more creativity out there going, and folks are thinking about things differently and thinking about how they farm in a little bit more creative way. And so it's giving them chances to at least experiment with some things.
Tom, you do an excellent job on watching the weather over the years, and you have a lot of good data at Waseca. Where are we right now on soil temperatures, and what do you project here going into this next week and last week in April? There's maybe a slow climb back up into the 60s. Are we in a good position here in terms of planting? Or obviously we've got good seed treatments here as well, but any comments on that?
Well, I do watch soil temperatures, and we have a chart if you want to see it. I update it as often as I can. This time of year, I try to do it at least 3 times a week because people are watching that. Right now, our 2 and 4 inch soil temperatures are in the upper 40s, and that's average. Now, on those warm days when we had our short planting window, 2 inch soil temperatures got up to about the upper 60s, but averaged more like mid 50s. So what you'll see from our end, and I think what most people want to look at is average. Interestingly, a lot of people, they'll call and say, "What's the soil temperature?" Like the soils warm up in the spring and they stay there and they cool off in the fall. Well, that's only true at a depth of about 3 feet. The seedling depth soil temperatures go up and down just like the air temperature. And people do want to see that. Long-term history shows that we are at the time of year when soil temperatures average about 50. We're right there about now. So they're a little cooler than average now. This morning I've got them at like 47 degrees. I think it's going to stay cool. It's cool through the weekend here. Next week doesn't sound abnormally warm, but I would expect soil temperatures will sneak back up in that 50 degree range next week. And typically by the first week of May, it no longer becomes an issue. We're usually in the mid 50s and moving up right around May 10th.
I know Jeff Coulter would say, fine, go ahead. Don't look back, so to speak, on the soil temperature when we're getting this close to the 1st of May.
I think so. I think most farmers look at conditions a lot more than temperature. If the conditions are right, and I've done it both ways. The spring of 2013, remember that was the year that a lot of farmers used the prevent plant option. We had a terrible spring. So I talked to the corn growers and I did some planting date research, 14, 15, 16, you know, the years following that. The first year I did it in 2014, I did exactly what you're supposed to do. It was our first planting date. It was about April 20th. It was cold, but the forecast was good. It was sunny. We were out there putting the crop in. It was cold and windy, but by the next day, the forecast temperatures were 60s and 70s. And we planted corn and it did fine. The second date was the opposite. It was what they tell you not to do. Soils were warm. There was cold weather in the forecast. It actually started raining just as we got done planting. A lot of people say that first drink of water shouldn't be cold. That's exactly what happened. And stands were fine. So we did it both ways, the way you're supposed to do it and the way you're not supposed to do it. And corn came through just fine both ways.
Yeah, it's interesting. Everybody dissects this stuff to death, right? I mean, there's good biology behind a lot of this idea about what are conditions at planting or within that first 24 hours, and then what are conditions like within the next, you know, few days to a week, you know, when you want to start to see germination occurring. But it's really, I mean, I think there's a lot of talk, but I haven't seen a lot of really good data that says that anything other than average temperatures over that period between, you know, planting and emergence is really that important. What are your feelings on that, Tom?
My feeling is I think the laboratory you can demonstrate this imbibitional chilling, and it's tough on seedlings, but there's a lot of variabilities in the field that you can't demonstrate in a laboratory. And I think you can have problems either way, and you can have success either way. So I think bottom line is what we just talked about. Most people look at the conditions at the time, and if it's after your crop insurance coverage date, which for our county here is April 10th, that goes county by county and differs by crop also. But usually if it's after that date and conditions are fit, we don't worry a lot about the temperature. And it's awful rare that by the 10th of May, we don't have adequate soil temperatures for germination. It's almost unbelievable what the sun does for us.
Yeah, and the other side of this too is that we are in Minnesota, and so typically our limitation is soil conditions. Completely apart from temperatures. We just can't get into the field because the ground is too wet. We can't work the ground or we can't plant appropriately. You know, obviously that's related to the temperature, but when it's, that seems to be the limiting factor. And I think if a farmer just went out and ignored the calendar, ignored the thermometer, they probably could do a decent job of getting a crop established just by looking at soil conditions. And that probably follows a little bit like what Coulter's referring to with his corn planting dates too.
You know, we preface this where we are recording this podcast on the 19th of April. And of course, we're hoping for sunshine. And I think that we indicated that is probably our biggest factor in helping in terms of driving those soil temperatures up is to having some sunlight and sunshine besides, you know, overcast conditions next week. Thinking ahead here a little bit, you know, you're working with Weed Science. I'm just going to segue just a little bit. I was talking with Tom Peters, our extension sugar beet weed specialist, indicated that in some places in southern Minn and western Minnesota, they've already close to 50-55% of the sugar beets already planted. And he's optimistic because they actually took some time and have some time this year to put down some pre-emergence herbicides, Tom. So I think that's the next thing to think about here in this realm. We do have some weed seeds that will germinate as well. Any just quick comments about looking forward here as far as growers are concerned and doing a good job not only planting but that early season weed control?
Well, it's fine to look at some of these early germinators. When I think of that, I think of giant ragweed, often one of the first weeds I see. Another weed that everyone has to deal with that really is subject to weather in the spring is common lamb's quarters. First thing about it, everyone's got it. It's everywhere. And when it's cool and dry in the spring, that's when I see lamb's quarter becoming much more of a problem. When it's warmer and wetter, the crop gets going, and lamb's quarter seems to not be as competitive. The other weed everyone's dealing with is water hemp, and the bad news about that is it can start germinating now, and it'll germinate well into the summer. So you can't avoid that one. I think I want to go back a minute to something Seth brought up about farmers planting, looking at their planting windows. And, you know, the climate scientists keep talking about our season getting longer. But I'm not so sure that helps on the farm because, like Seth mentioned, we don't just look at temperature, it's moisture. We still have to wait for fields to dry out. If the climate scientists say our frost dates are changing, well, that doesn't really help because we need the conditions as much as the frost dates. So that's something to really take into consideration is just because the climate scientists say, oh, our season is much longer than it used to be, it doesn't really change our decision-making on the farm.
Are we okay on our soil moisture right now in terms of that? We had a moderate drought to a little bit dry conditions. We've had snow. We've had some rain. As a whole in southern Minnesota, what's your observations? Do we need more, half an inch more a week here, or how are we doing in terms of the top and the subsoil?
I think we're in a very good position here in the southern part of the state. Even though the drought monitor, which they update that weekly, and I don't know that it brought into the consideration that system that just went through that brought about an inch and a half of rain to most everyone. But my feeling in the spring of the year is it doesn't take a lot of moisture to get the crop started. So I don't mind being a little on the dry side in the spring of the year. Now, hydrologists look at drought a little bit differently than I would on the farm. They consider things like streams and long-term precipitation. We can be a little shorter thinking on the farm. We've got enough moisture now to get the crop started. We need moisture in June, July, and August. And you know, on the other side, if we do get plenty of moisture, we can get too dry on the farm a lot quicker than the hydrologists show that we're in a drought. We can go 2 weeks and be too dry, and the hydrologists don't show up on the drought monitor. So I pay attention a little bit more to walking in the field than looking at the drought monitor to say what we need for rain.
For sure. And I mean, then, you know, you were talking about spatial differences. This drought monitor looks at really large scale things, you know, county kind of scale. And what we're really talking about is in the farm, if you've got 10 or 20% of your acres in that farm that are suffering, that's a big deal. So just some sandy knolls and some areas can, you know, are going to fire up and be tough pretty early. So the other question I had for you was kind of the soil profile question. I mean, if we were really dry early, we got pretty good recharge, as you said, but, you know, we're not completely full for the most part. So does that mean that some of these later rains we had this past week when this broadcast is aired, does that mean that though that water is going to kind of go away a little bit quicker? Or do you think it doesn't really play any effect, that we basically have this kind of water perched up high in the soil profile, and it just takes a few days of some warm, windy weather to get to dry that soil surface? How's your hydrology, and what do you think about this kind of year? Is it different than we have most years, or is it pretty much the same?
I think the inch and a half we just had percolated in pretty well. I didn't see a lot of ponding water. That there are some springs when an inch and a half rain in the middle of April causes a real mess. Now let's go back to like 1st of October. We were really quite dry. We had an unusual winter where a lot of our winter precipitation became available soil moisture. We added to the soil profile during the winter, which is unusual. Usually we get a fall recharge. We didn't get much rain in November, but December was pretty good to us. Even our January, February rain, because we didn't have much soil frost, became soil moisture. I think our profile is nearly full. If we got another inch, I think you'd see quite a bit of tile flow. So we've got enough to last through the planting season if we don't get any more rain. And that's, I think, what most farmers would like to see, a couple weeks here where we don't get any precipitation, then get a little bit here and there. There are springs where this inch and a half would have really put farmers in a bad mood because now they're looking at a 10-day delay before it dries up and it's going to be a mess. I think that's why a lot of farmers didn't use that April 15th window to plant because they knew, well, it's only going to rain an inch and a half or two. I can take that. I'll be back out in the field in 5 days. That's not a problem.
I'm smart.
Tom, we're at the end of our time allotment here on the podcast. Any last words that you'd like to leave with the folks?
My thinking is let's have a good crop this year.
I like the positive attitude.
Appreciate that, Tom. And I know that you do publish some weather information from Waseca. People can look at that online. We also have, of course, our University of Minnesota Extension web pages, Seth, on both soybeans and corn that are online, and the crop news we author as well. So we want to say thanks to Tom for taking time here to visit with us a little bit about the planting season here, particularly in southern Minnesota, and a little projection of what we might be looking at for 2024. So thank you again. This has been with Tom Hoverstead, University of Minnesota Waseca Research and Outreach Center scientist at Waseca. I'm Dave Nicolai with University of Minnesota Extension, educator, and also my co-host, Dr. Seth Nave, University of Minnesota Extension soybean specialist, and say thanks for joining us on this version of the episode of University of Minnesota Extension Cropcast.